This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to Red Flags, a true crime podcast where we talk a little bit about cases that are current and a little bit about cases that have haunted us for years. I'm Tori Telfer.
And I'm Karina Michelle.
And later on in this episode, we're going to dive into the very complicated case of Muchie Bailey. And we're going to hear from the amazing writer, Isaac J. Bailey, who is close to this case in a significant and tough way.
But Tori, before we get to that, I think we should talk about the biggest true crime news that broke over the holiday break.
Yes.
Which is the passing of the most prolific serial killer in the U.S., Samuel Little.
Wow.
In 2014, Samuel Little was arrested for the murder of three women. And in 2018, a Texas Ranger named James Holland befriended him and got him to confess to 90 more killings.
Wow.
According to the Washington Post, he passed away on December 30th in a California hospital. His cause of death at the time of recording this has not been confirmed, but he did have some health problems such as diabetes and other ailments.
So we had mentioned a couple episodes ago that we were going to read the three-part Washington Post series and talk about it. It was weird to get the news that he had passed away because I feel like Karina and I were gearing up to sort of discuss it, and I sort of forgot that he was in a cell somewhere. You know, like still around. I think when a serial killer dies, it's a very complicated moment. Like, I don't necessarily know how to react. Of course, it feels crass to celebrate, which people did when Ted Bundy was electrocuted, by the way. People made signs and had barbecues.
People took their children so that they could learn about what happens when you do
when
awful things.
Vengeance is served. Yeah. So we don't like that approach. But at the same time, I mean, this was a terrible person who did terrible things. But then there's also the thought of the secrets he has taken to his grave.
Yeah.
I mean, the man knew so much. He had a photographic memory, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he was an artist, too. So he drew a lot of his victims. And when he kind of knew their names, he would write them down too. But there's still some of his victims who have not been identified.
Yeah. I mean, my understanding is that he confessed all he remembered to James Holland. So at least that is over, kind of. But I mean, we don't know. He could have re-remembered things, or there's just a lot of families out there who are literally wondering if their loved one was a Samuel Little victim. And it's heartbreaking to think that his death could make it so that they're never going to find out.
It's really disturbing to think that Samuel Little was murdering victims from 1970 to 2005. Yeah. And it took until 2018 for him to confess to these 93 victims.
I know. It's so weird that he was one of those. You know how everyone's like, there were so many serial killers in the 70s and 80s. Like, that's mm-hmm. a fact we all know. And he was one of them, but we didn't know it until fairly recently. And so it's like, there were decades where we were all just chirping on about how there was this spate of serial killing in the 70s yeah. and 80s because Bundy and because Gacy, you know, and it's like there was the most prolific one of all, like, was among us still, and we had no idea. I mean, isn't that yeah. so creepy?
I think it's because of the type of victims that he chose to. He did mm-hmm, pick women 100%. Who were marginalized, who were homeless, who were prostitutes, where a lot of these cases were closed as accidental or as an accidental overdose or undetermined. But it is heartbreaking also to know that because of the type of victim that he chose and how these women lived, they didn't get the attention that they deserved.
And he was so aware of that. It's like, mm-hmm. it's not like, oh, he conveniently didn't get caught because he happened to prefer this type of victim.
Yeah.
He was so intentional. I mean, there's a chilling quote from him in that three-part Washington Post series we've been talking about mm-hmm. where he says, I'm not going to go over there into the white neighborhood and pick out a little teenage girl. Mm-hmm. Like, he knows what types of victims are going to get the media attention, get the resources, and get him caught, and what types of victims no one's going to notice or no one's going to care, and he can just keep doing his thing. I mean, he reminds me a lot of Gary Ridgway in that way, the Green River killer, who also very intentionally went after sex workers and was also, I think, so aware of what he wanted to do and what types of people he could kill to enable him to do it. It's really sad.
There was this quote from him in 60 Minutes, which to me was the most disturbing, where he's talking about his victims and he says, they was broke and homeless and they walked right into my spider web.
Yeah, that's a horrifying image because the spider doesn't even have to go out and find its victims, right? Mm-hmm. It just sits there and waits.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he identifies with that is bone-chilling.
Yeah. So Samuel Little actually told 60 Minutes that he hoped that his confession could help exonerate anyone who is wrongly convicted of his crimes. Mm-hmm. And he also added, I say if I can help get somebody out of jail, you know, then God might smile a little bit more on me.
A little bit more, Sam?
Yeah.
I don't know about that. Yeah, but it is tough to think that there could be people right now sitting in prison for mm-hmm. murders that Samuel Little committed. We definitely know of two cases, one where a man named Jerry Frank Townsend was jailed for 22 years, and the case against him fell to pieces, and then we later found out that Little had actually been the murderer in that case. And there's another case, the 1984 murder of Willa Mae Bivens near Tallahassee. According to an anonymous member of law enforcement who spoke to the Washington Post, Little is a solid match for that case as well. In that case, another man named Eddie Daniel Harris pleaded no contest to manslaughter and was later released after multiple commitments to a mental hospital. So that's two that we are aware of, but I mean, there could be more. And
yeah,
I just imagine that with Samuel Little dead, all that is going to be more complicated.
If you want to learn more about the Samuel Little case, we really recommend the two-part ID series, The 93 Victims of Samuel Little, which you can stream on the just-launched Discovery Plus as well.
Yes, and you can also read the three-part Washington Post series we keep mentioning. It's called Indifferent Justice, and then talk to us about it. We want to know your thoughts on the case. We want to know your reactions. Like, how do you feel and react when a famous serial killer dies? It's a very weird place to be in. Give us a call. Our number is 888-9-REDFLA. That's 888-973-3352. Call me.
For me, Tori, the death of Samuel Little brought a lot of the same emotions that I had while I was listening to the interview that you're about to present. I feel like I have to reserve all sense of empathy and emotion towards victims and their families. And I think it's important to also offer some of that emotion towards perpetrators and their loved ones.
Are you saying, like, you want to be happy that he died, but also you feel weird about being happy about a death?
I think the norm in the true crime world is to not feel bad for these perpetrators because they're so awful that they deserve whatever happens to them and worse. But I think that as a human, there is a part of me that feels weird about celebrating someone's death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into the story we're about to talk about. And I just want to be very clear. I mean, we were chatting about a serial killer. We're now going to talk about a perpetrator who is in no way in the league of Samuel Little. So, like, let's make a sharp break here.
One of the hardest things about this, especially saw Doug Barry that early on, is that essentially that you are blamed for sort of what your sibling did.
We're going to hear the story of Muchie Bailey, and we're going to hear from his brother, Isaac J. Bailey. And one of the points that Isaac makes, and that I think Karina and I have, like, viscerally experienced while working on this episode, is that not only are crimes complicated, it's never as simple as victim versus perpetrator, good versus evil, you know, very black and white, two-sided issues. Things are complicated. Things are messy. People need empathy and grace and mercy on all sides. And not only is that true, but it's important. We need to be able to accept that things are complicated and sort of hold it all in our hands at the same time. And according to Isaac, that's really the only way we're going to move forward. So let's get into the story. We're going to hear from Isaac J. Bailey. And I know you've started reading his book. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. So let me tell you a little bit about him, even though you might already know. He is a very successful writer and journalist. He was a Nieman Fellow for Journalism at Harvard in 2014. And he's got two books out. One just came out this October. It's called Why Didn't We Riot? A Black Man in Trump Land. And then his earlier book, which I've read and Karina is currently reading, is My Brother Muchie, Regaining Dignity in the Face of Crime, Poverty, and Racism in the American South. So Isaac's family is the family of a perpetrator. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get into what that looks like. We're going to get into the trauma that causes. Isaac himself has had this very successful career, but he also suffered from PTSD and a stutter that was made a lot worse when this incident that we're about to explore happened to his family. Mm-hmm. You're about to hear a deep dive into this story, and then, you know, this is going to raise a lot of questions, and we'll talk about them afterwards.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Isaac J. Bailey has a vivid childhood memory. He's 6 years old, standing in the kitchen, watching his father beat his mother. This is not the first or the last time that this has happened, and there are a lot of complicating factors that lead to this moment. Isaac's mom was only 13 when she was forced to marry his much, much older father. That's one trauma. But his father was traumatized too, a black man descended directly from slaves who grew up during the horrors of the Jim Crow era. Now they live in a tiny town in South Carolina called St. Stephen, and they don't have very much money, and all of these hardships and traumas and systemic issues are feeding into the violence that Isaac is witnessing that night. And Isaac is so little that he's afraid to do anything, but he feels guilty about that. And then someone runs into the kitchen and saves him. His big brother, Mucci. Mucci flings himself onto their father and physically pulls him off of their mother. It's going to be okay, at least for now. Mucci is there, Isaac's hero.
Like, he was like Superman, essentially. He was like big and strong and fast. He was a football player. He was a basketball player. He was like very, very outgoing. He was like actually stronger than every other bully on the block. He could like actually just keep bullies away from us, literally. Which was very helpful.
Mucci was the coolest. He promised his little brothers that he was going to turn them into the next Jackson 5. He took them on fast car rides and kept the whole family afloat with checks from odd jobs and a time in the army. But he had his own demons. PTSD from that same time in the army, the trauma of dealing with an abusive father who would beat him too, and a streak of bad behavior that was growing worse and worse. He was taking pills, growing weed, getting arrested for petty theft, mugging women. Their mother was worried, but when she tried to consult with professionals, they told her that this was just a rebellious phase. And then, in April of 1982, when Mucci was 22, he robbed a white man named James Bunch. Mucci was arrested. And at some point, one of Mucci's friends whispered to him that he really needed to, quote, take care of Mr. Bunch in order to avoid more jail time. Mucci had been drinking, taking drugs, and his friend's message really stuck in his head. So a few days later, he confronted James Bunch at his house, demanding that he drop the robbery charge. James refused. The two men started fighting, and then Mucci began stabbing James. James' blood splattered 5 feet up the walls. James managed to make his way out into the yard while his house went up in flames behind him. Mucci told police that he'd been trying to hide the evidence, but later he told his cellmate that the fire was an accident. A lamp fell over during the fight, he said. James Bunch was dead by the time an ambulance got him to the hospital.
I'm like late one night where she noticed that Mucci sort of actually snuck back into the house and then she ran like into the bathroom. He actually changed clothes, then he ran back out. Shortly after that, it's like, I don't know, like it was just like a couple hours later, et cetera, or like whatever, where she had like all of these cops like in our front yard, et cetera. Looking for him later on that I would find out like he had sort of like actually murdered a man.
The police wouldn't tell the Bailey family why they were looking for Mucci, but they told them that it was, quote, real serious. Later that night, the police caught up with him. And just like that, Superman was gone.
He was drunk and also sort of on sort of like drugs that night. That one night, like it actually changed like everything, like in our family, like and also actually for the victim's family as well.
Mucci pled guilty and was sentenced to life in prison. James Bunch's sisters mourned the violent death of their beloved brother. But for the Baileys, things were trickier. They couldn't mourn Mucci. They weren't allowed to. They'd lost a brother too, but he was a murderer, and that seemed to overshadow everything.
One of the hardest things about this, especially saw Dyke Barry that early on, is that essentially that you are blamed for sort of what your sibling did. Yes, and sort of actually shamed kind of into silence. Which sort of actually makes it hard for you to actually reach out and even mourn, because that even though that he had done this really, really awful thing, and yet though that at least for us, that we actually were actually losing this sort of pillar of our family. And yet though, if we ever said that out loud, or anybody, we sort of actually would be accused of excusing his crime almost, which makes it really, really impossible, to actually reach out actually for help. We actually desperately needed help too.
They needed counseling to help them deal with the fact that their beloved brother and son had done something terrible. They needed money to help with the fact that Mucci's paychecks were gone. They needed grace. Isaac had already been struggling with a stutter, and seeing his hero brother thrown into prison for life made his stutter worse. His mother was sitting on the sofa for hours, not speaking. His little brothers were turning to crime themselves. They were all painfully aware that James Bunch's family was in agony. Isaac's mom even went to his funeral, but they couldn't find any relief for their own pain. In the world of criminal justice, families like the Baileys are the invisible ones, and siblings like Isaac are the invisible of the invisible. When people bother to research the families of the incarcerated, 80% of that research never even asks how the brothers and sisters are coping. But these families and these brothers and sisters can be desperate for help. Studies have shown that the families of the incarcerated often need assistance with basic things like food and shelter. They need help maintaining a connection with their incarcerated relative. And children who experience a family member's incarceration can have health problems, which causes additional financial strain on the family and on society. One study estimated that in the U.S., these, quote, indirect costs of experiencing a family member's incarceration cost $22.5 billion during adulthood and $346 million during childhood. So this should be everybody's problem. But when it came to the Bailey family, no one cared about what they were going through. Isaac even got the sense that people wanted them to suffer. Their neighbors refused to testify about the fact that they knew Mucci. People would say things like, well, if Mucci didn't want you to suffer, he shouldn't have committed a crime. There was a whole lot of, we're praying for you, but no one would speak up for them in public. The shame of Mucci's crime had fallen onto the entire Bailey family. And since he was a young black man who was now a violent criminal, no one was interested in seeing him as anything other than that.
Bottom line, nothing else matters. Even though that I can actually go back in detail, our sort of struggles with sort of poverty and racism, and also domestic violence and so many things, Mucci himself, who actually sort of actually got, he was actually beaten a whole lot as well. Actually, he was growing up. He actually sort of actually stayed in the army, only for 1 year, simply because of some what we now know actually was sort of PTSD, et cetera. All that they want to know, all that they want to talk about, is that in April of 1982 that he did this evil thing. For a very, very long time too, that is how our family was viewed. Also, if you are a black family, on sort of this side of the crime issue, you are essentially the black sheep of the black sheep. You sort of actually have sort of actually proven the kind of stereotype of sort of black people and violence. Yes, and so essentially we actually get it, of course, actually from the white racists, and also from the criminal justice system, and also sort of actually from the public at large. And also, frankly, from sort of many black people, who are ashamed that we are black.
25 years after Mucci was arrested, Isaac himself was diagnosed with a case of PTSD. For years, he'd been struggling with violent, intrusive thoughts. Sometimes they got so bad that he'd have to leave the room because he was so afraid that he'd actually hurt his wife and children.
At least like in part, that my current day struggle, so actually with my stutter even today, kind of like is sort of actually linked back, to those events and sort of how it is that we were like actually treated afterwards. Yes, and then so like essentially once this kind of things happens, it actually never leaves you.
It was his therapist who suggested that he write a book about Muchie. And it was the process of writing a book that made him confront the fact that Muchie was definitely guilty. Isaac had always held out hope that his big brother was secretly innocent, but also that Muchie was so much more than his worst act. It was a complex knot of guilt and blood and race and generational trauma. Muchie had done something awful, but he was still human.
Yes, and I think that like there sort of actually has been this conflation between revenge and justice, like in our country, especially when it comes to violent crime. Essentially, kind of like if somebody does something violent, we actually think that justice means finding them and then like actually locking them up like forever, like or sort of like actually sort of even sort of like actually killing them like mm-hmm. in turn, trying to like actually treat them as like harshly as possible, even if this sort of affects their family, like in a profound way, who cares?
In 2005, while working on the book, Isaac met with the sisters of the man his brother had killed.
So like at first, like I sort of actually had this kind of vision, like this hope we all would like actually finally sort of like actually get together and like sort of actually cry together on Oprah's show or something like that. Yes, you know, like yeah. Come by, yeah, exactly, like all those sort of things. Yes. Yeah. Yes, I mean, but that did not happen.
James Bunch's family admitted that they no longer thought of the entire Bailey family as monsters, but they still wanted Muchie to stay in prison forever. And they asked Isaac to never contact them again. So it was a complete shock when, 9 years later, Isaac got the sort of text from his sister that he never thought he'd see. It read, "They gave Muchie parole." After over 32 years in prison, his brother was out. Isaac still doesn't know what exactly changed, but he suspects that James Bunch's family showed his brother mercy. 1 year ago, Muchie got off probation. He's now fully free. He's getting counseling and assistance through Veterans Affairs, and he's actually starting to write, just like Isaac had to do.
All of those factors together, like it just makes it really, really difficult to actually navigate like life.
Yeah. It sounds like there's nowhere you can turn. I mean, if you're getting it from all sides like that.
Yes. Yes.
Where do you even go if you need someone to listen to you? Or
exactly. Yes. Exactly. Yes.
I guess you have to take your story into your own hands.
Yes. Exactly.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
So, Karina, I'm curious, what was it like for you hearing the story of the family of a perpetrator?
It was really interesting, but also so heartbreaking because this is a side of the story that we rarely get to hear. Mm-hmm. And it's really difficult to listen to them share about the lack of resources and they just don't receive help in any way.
Yeah, that was one of the most heartbreaking parts for me, too, is like how they were just getting it from all sides. Like no mm-hmm. one was there for the Bailey family and how it wasn't just that people didn't help them, but people actively wanted them to suffer. Mm-hmm. Is something Isaac mentioned when we talked. It's like you would like to think you wouldn't be so cruel if someone you knew had something like this happen in their family.
Mm-hmm. There's also this sense of taboo of even talking about your loved one in any sense. I know that in the book, Isaac mentions it wasn't even that he couldn't talk about the horrific act. It was that he also couldn't talk about his brother in a good way. He couldn't talk about the hero that he was and the good things that he did for his family.
Right, because then people would think he was excusing the crime or you know, everyone just wanted to reduce Muchie to this one thing. And if you say anything positive about him, that was interpreted as like forgiving everything else.
Yeah. Other than Isaac's book, and Isaac's book has a very unique perspective. I watched the show Evil Lives Here from ID, and in it you have family members of perpetrators talk about their experience and share their pain, and you can really tell how their lives are changed forever.
Yeah, I know on the show, those crimes are a bit different, right? That it's often like the perpetrator is violent towards the family, which mm-hmm. is a different thing. But you see that even in those cases, there's a lot of shame on the family and people are judgmental, even if the family is sort of directly victimized by their own family member.
Yeah. And I think being a part of the true crime world, I talk to a lot of people who are also into true crime. And mm-hmm. the number one reason that I always hear why everyone is into true crime is because they want to know how a serial killer thinks. Like, they want to understand the psychology, why they got to this point. But I think this is one of those cases that clearly shows you why someone got to this point. It shows mm-hmm. you how coming from poverty and difficulty and a home where it's not stable, where you see a lot of violence, the effects that that can mm-hmm. have. And I think that that social aspect, it's sometimes so obvious that those are things that lead to crime, mm-hmm. but we try to find a deeper meaning or take it all back to nature versus nurture.
Yeah, it's easier to just think that people commit crimes because they're evil, full mm-hmm. stop.
Yeah.
And because society has harmed them in many different ways or let them down.
Tori, on episode one, we talked about the murder of Bianca Devins and how her family mm-hmm. wants to get Bianca's law passed. This legislation will require that all social media platforms with more than $10 million in revenue and more than 100,000 monthly users establish an office that's dedicated to identifying and removing violent content that violates the platform. So one of the biggest issues in this case is that social media platforms like Instagram, they didn't have the manpower to monitor and see who was posting this horrific picture. And mm-hmm. one of the things that it would require is to have a whole team that is solely dedicated to doing this.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's about time.
Yeah, I think that social media is definitely wild, wild west right now. And I think mm-hmm. that there needs to be more regulation. Mm-hmm. I actually spoke to Bianca Devins' mom, Kim. I asked her if there was anything else that we could do, and she actually told me that the law has been introduced, and she wants to encourage listeners to call your representatives and ask them to support Bianca's law to ensure that it gets passed. To contact your representative, call the U.S. Congress switchboard at 202-224-3121. We will also make sure to have a short script of what you can say in the show notes. And I want to thank you in advance for calling. It takes 2 seconds, but I think it can make a huge difference.
It really does. And we know we're all, you know, none of us like making phone calls these days, but the script is going to make it really easy for you, we promise. Thank you all so much for listening, and extra thanks to Isaac J. Bailey for coming on the podcast and telling us his story.
For more true crime conversations, be sure to check out ID on Twitter at Discovery ID or on Instagram and TikTok at Investigation Discovery.
And you can ask us questions on our own Instagram feeds too. I'm at Tori_Telfer.
And I am at the Karina Michelle.
Thanks for listening today. Red Flags is a production of Investigation Discovery and Audiation. For ID, our executive producers are Amy Angelowitz, Jessica Lowther, and Marissa Lucy.
For Audiation, our executive producers are Sandy Smallins and Michael Wolfson.
Mark Lotto is our story editor, Ireland Meacham is our producer, and Brad Stratton is our editor-mixer.
Theme music by Marty Beller.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.